Hi, this is Herb Montgomery with Renewed Heart Ministries, and I want to welcome you to this week's weekly podcast. This week, we're going to continue with our look at Luke 11. We're going to actually pick up with verse 42, where Jesus says, "Woe to you, Pharisees, because you give God a tenth of your mint, your rue, and all other kinds of garden herbs, but you neglect justice and the love of God. You should have practiced the latter without leaving the former undone." We're going to be looking at Jesus' first woe here to the leadership of Israel in his day. And I believe that for us as followers of Jesus today, this passage serves as a warning of what type of religious environments not to participate in producing. First, I want to look at this word woe. We have to understand it's a declaration of impending judgment, but this is not necessarily about an eternal judgment. Jesus here is most likely not referring to the modern Christian idea that I don't subscribe to of an eternally burning hell, but rather to the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple, which would take place in 70 AD. He's referring to the destruction of an entire religious system. That system was infested with a religious cancer, and if things did not change, it would have to be done away with. The picture of God and his character that was being presented to the world by that religious system was the exact opposite of what was really true about God. This is not to say that there's not an ultimate judgment end time or end of this age sense, like Jesus taught, but that in this passage specifically, Jesus isn't talking about the ultimate judgment per se, but rather what was about to take place in AD 70 if things didn't change for Israel. Something else we need to understand is that Jesus' woe here in these passages were not about an inevitable doom. It wasn't about an inevitable fate. Most of biblical prophecy is not predictive, but rather prescriptive. Let me explain. The Greeks held an inevitable view of prophecy. They sought out oracles to tell them the future. Their idea was that the future was fixed. They were fatalistic, or that they believed that things would happen as they were predicted, no matter what. They viewed prophecy, once again, as predictive. We're in danger today of doing the same thing as well. This is not the Jewish understanding of prophecy. On the whole, God, through the Hebrew prophets, used prophecy not primarily as predictive, but as prescriptive. What I mean by that is, God often in prophecy is simply sharing what is going to happen if the present course is not changed. On the whole, when God would say that something was going to happen, it was so people would change their behavior so that what was prophesied would never happen. We can see this exemplified in Jesus' words to Peter about his future denial. Jesus said to Peter that tonight, before the cock crowed, Peter would deny him three times. Now, once Jesus said that to Peter, it didn't mean that Peter would have to deny him three times. The whole reason Jesus shared this with Peter was so that Peter would change his course and the denial would never take place. That was the hope for Jesus, is that what he was prophesying would never happen. You can see this principle in Jeremiah 8, 5 through 9 for another example. The Jews did not view prophecy as predictive per se, as the Greeks did, but once again rather as prescriptive. Now, this is not to say that prophecy is never predictive, but rather simply that on the whole, most of the time, it's not predictive. This point, I believe today, we cannot overemphasize. Today, we have many folks trying to figure out every last detail of end-time events, poring over books like the books of Daniel and Revelation, and trying to pinpoint the chronology of the closing events of this world's history. Honestly, too many times, to me, it seems like this has been like a spiritual caffeine. It gets you all pumped up at first, but then when it wears off, it leaves you lower spiritually than when you first began. The point of all prophecy is to know not the exact order of all future events, but rather to know him in whom you have believed, so that no matter how things end up, you're in a reconciling relationship with God. Now, lastly this week, let's get to the point of what I believe Luke 11, 42 is really talking about. I want to focus on what it is that Jesus actually condemned in the Pharisees' religious system. We've been talking about an outside of the cup versus an inside of the cup focus for the last few these sites, Jesus takes it one step further here. This first woe is centered on their focus on externals, yes, but it's their majoring in the minors. You see, they were producing a religious environment that focused on the do's and the don'ts of behaviors, which led them to place great significance on matters of little importance while giving little emphasis to matters of significant importance. In other words, their focus led them to a place where they couldn't see the forest for the trees. The example that Jesus gave was that they were giving a tenth of their mint, their rue, and their other garden herbs, which held a very low, if not the lowest, economic marketplace value in their culture. The economic value was almost insignificant, but they were very strict in paying a tenth of this amount, though it was so small. At the same time, they were ignoring justice towards others and love toward God. You see, they were giving great attention to detail and things that were really of minor significance while they were completely ignoring the big stuff. Now, I want to be careful here. There is a sense in which all sin is sin and in which all things are equal. This is especially true under the imposed paradigm. If you don't know what I mean by that, I would encourage you to check out the presentation on our website entitled Intrinsic or Imposed. But under the intrinsic paradigm, not all sins are equal. Not all sins set in motion the same intrinsic destructive force. Some sins cause more intrinsic damage than others. The point here is that the Pharisees were creating a religious environment where things of minor significance were focused on with great conscientiousness, while the things of great significance, acting justly towards others, being the guardians of fairness and equality so that no one was violated, and holding love toward God as the sum total of all that they were about, these things were grossly ignored. I want to be clear, Jesus was not condemning their great conscientiousness. Rather, he was condemning their directing greater conscientiousness to matters of very little importance while virtually ignoring things that were of infinite importance. One of the insights Jesus gives us is that he brings to us a sense of perspective and balance. He had a sense of prioritizing things. He taught that if you loved God and you loved your neighbor, you're going to fulfill the whole law. Jesus could distinguish the center from the parameter, and he largely ignored external behaviors and dealt almost exclusively with matters of the heart. To the Pharisees, though, everything was equally important. There was no perspective. To Jesus, though, there was perspective. Today, as followers of Jesus, we too must create spiritual environments that major in the majors and minor in the minors. We must produce, in light of what we've covered over the last few podcasts, environments that focus on the heart rather than on trying to control people's outward behavior. But at the same time, we must also focus on matters that are truly major with the same perspective that Jesus possessed. We must begin to use the same sense of prioritizing that Jesus demonstrated. And what is the most significant matter, almost the deepest matter of the heart that we can focus our attention on? I believe the matter of greatest importance, and the one that Jesus spent the majority of his effort trying to affect, is the matter of answering the questions, what is your heart-level understanding and picture of God's character and what he thinks and feels towards you? What kind of a person is God? And given this, what is in his inmost heart toward you? Only when these questions are answered will we be able not only to produce environments where people can see God, but we will help others see the truth about our Heavenly Father too. We'll continue with verse 43 next week. For this week, keep living in love and loving like Christ. I love you guys. Now go build the kingdom.